Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, January 10th, 2026. ExxonMobil revives food bank program. After federal cuts leave West Texas Food Bank with $2 million less. A spate of federal spending cuts in 2025 saw West Texas Food Bank, with $2 million less to work with in supporting its 19-county area that stretches from just south of Lubbock all the way to the U.S.-Mexico border. One company is stepping up to revive a program the food bank was forced to cut. Quote, ExxonMobil is proud to support organizations and programs that provide critical services, increased opportunities, and a better quality of life to the people of West Texas, end quote. Matt Mathis, ExxonMobil's Midland production manager, said in a statement. Quote, nourish and learn strengthens not only families, but the overall health and resilience of West Texas, end quote. Congress cut education funding from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, in last year's funding package, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That left the food bank little choice but to lay off dietetic employees who focused on educating the public about how to prepare healthy meals, stretch their food budgets, and adopt more active lifestyles, West Texas Food Bank CEO Libby Stevens told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, once the spending bill was passed, we immediately lost about $174,000 for that program, end quote, Stevens said. Also lost was $674,000 via a local food purchase assistance cooperative agreement, LFPA, grant. Quote, that money was used to buy food that's grown locally in the state of Texas and supported smaller farmers. In all, we had to face the reality that we were losing about $2 million in both food value and programming costs, end quote. Faced with a sudden loss of funding and surging demand amid a federal pause in SNAP benefits late last year due to the prolonged government shutdown, Stevens says the community came to the rescue. Quote, foundations really leaned in to make sure we could afford to continue purchasing food, end quote, she said. Quote, funding from foundations and corporations has also increased, and the community at large just stepped up to help make sure we could continue to feed thousands of West Texas families. It was definitely a humbling experience, end quote. For its part, ExxonMobil is putting in $200,000 this year to revive the Nourish and Learn program, which will allow West Texas Food Bank to expand its offerings and outreach efforts across the Permian Basin. The oil grant has given a 3-year commitment to keep the program going, with funding increases annually to account for inflation, Stevens said. Iced tea seller seeks to build across from school. Location is site of future Lehigh. An Andrews-based construction company called Texas Brothers LLC hopes to open a new HTO location on a property it owns in West Midland. Working with applicant Kai Ellison, they are currently in the process of receiving a preliminary plat, which will divide it into two lots. Originally founded as a family-run side hustle in Amarillo in 2009, HTO began franchising in 2018 and has since expanded to include locations across the southern United States. This includes 7 locations in the Modessa region, specifically 2 in Midland, not counting this planned one, 1 in Greenwood, and 4 in Odessa. Covering 1.48 acres, the land is situated at the southeast corner of Thomason Drive and Tradewinds Boulevard, part of several new developments in the area, including a Kent Quick next door on Thomason. This new location will put HTO directly across the street from the forthcoming Midland Lee High School campus, which will allow the business to have a massive customer base in the student body. Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended approval of the request. It will be reviewed for approval at a future Midland City Council meeting. Midland building permits for December 29th through January 2nd. Building permits for December 22nd through January 2nd. 200 East Florida Avenue, commercial alteration. 5324 Briarwood Avenue, new commercial. 6309 Prairie Ridge Drive, swimming pool. 412 Cottonwood Avenue, solar panels. 3404 West Ohio Avenue, residential alteration. 2009 Desert Willow Avenue, solar panels. 4223 Siesta Lane, residential alteration. 1108 North Main Street, solar panels. 4310 Coyote Trail, residence, detached. D1200 Cotton Flat Road, sign. 3300 West Illinois Avenue, sign. Source, City of Midland. Midland County warns of warrant payment scam. Midland County is alerting residents about a warrant payment scam in which scammers impersonate officials in an attempt to collect fraudulent payments. Quote, we are seeing a concerning rise in scammers targeting our community by exploiting fear and urgency, end quote. Chief of Warrant Services Jorge Martinez said in a statement. Quote, protect yourself by hanging up, refusing to meet up, and contacting our office directly for verification, end quote. Scammers claim victims must pay to clear active warrants and often escalate the pressure by threatening immediate arrest or fines if payment is not made immediately. Midland County officials say that warrant services will never request cash, credit/debit card details, or in-person meetups to collect payments or resolve warrants. Quote, our mission is to protect the public by ensuring residents know how to identify scams that attempt to misuse our name, end quote, Martinez said. Quote, please help us spread this warning to friends, family, and neighbors so no one becomes a victim, end quote. Here are tips the county shared on how to protect yourself. What to do? If you receive a suspicious call or message, do not provide personal or financial information. Do not agree to meet at any location. Document the caller's number if possible. Hang up immediately. Report the attempt to authorities. How to verify a warrant. Residents can confirm warrant information safely by contacting Midland County Warrant Services directly at 432-688-4700 and requesting to speak with the investigator assigned to their case. This is the only official method to verify warrant status. Other facts to know about warrants include Midland County Warrant Services will never demand immediate payment. The office will never request cash, prepaid cards, or card information. The office will never ask you to meet an investigator to deliver payment. Threats of arrest tied to payment demands are always fraudulent. Warrant resolution is handled through official legal processes, not financial transactions. Randy Corley will be making his final call. 2026 will be announcer's final Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo. The 2026 Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo will mark the final time audiences will hear the unmistakable voice of Randy Corley from the announcer stand, bringing a close to a legacy that has spanned decades and defined the sound, spirit, and tradition of Sandhills. For generations of competitors and fans alike, Corley's voice has been constant at the Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo, from opening prayers to calling the action in the arena. Quote, Randy has been a part of the Sandhills Rodeo family for decades, end quote, said Nancy McCain, vice president of marketing for the Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo. Quote, we are proud to have been a stop on his rodeo schedule and deeply grateful for the way he has helped tell our story at every rodeo performance, end quote. Alongside his wife, Michelle, Corley has been recognized as a steady and gracious presence and has embodied the values of faith, integrity, and service that the event was built upon, Sandhill said in a statement. Corley will return to the Sandhills Arena one final time, guiding the audience through every action and moment in the PRCA competition. Corley was inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in 2017. Prior to his induction, he had been named PRCA Announcer of the Year 12 times. He had announced the National Finals Rodeo 16 times, which is an accomplishment reserved for the, quote, elite, end quote, in rodeo broadcasting, the press release said. He is known as a, quote, living legend, end quote, in rodeo and was originally a bareback riding and bull riding contestant. Corley's path to the microphone began with radio commercials, followed by broadcasting school, where he pursued his vision of becoming a rodeo announcer. His career took a pivotal turn when the late Hadley Barrett, Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame announcer and Corley's father-in-law, heard him announce in North Platte, Nebraska, and encouraged him to apply for his PRCA card in 1980. The Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo team said it is honored to serve as the setting for this final chapter for Corley as he reduces his announcement schedule, and that this final chapter celebrates a lifetime of excellence, service, and unwavering dedication to the sport of rodeo. The 2026 Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo said it will stand not only as a showcase of world-class competition, but as a heartfelt tribute to the man whose voice has called its greatest moments for decades. Man killed after crashing into trailer blocking highway. Ector County. One man has died following a fatal collision involving two vehicles. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, the incident occurred at approximately 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at the intersection of State Highway 302 and Farm to Market Road 866. DPS stated that Derek Wayne Pearson, 49, of Belleville, was pronounced dead at the scene. DPS said Pearson was driving a 2022 Ford F-250 westbound on SH-302 in the inside lane, while a 2024 Peterbilt 567 with a towed trailer was traveling southbound on FM-866 when the Peterbilt failed to yield the right-of-way at the stop sign of SH-302, causing the trailer to block the westbound lanes. DPS said that Ford struck the trailer. Pearson was recorded as wearing his seatbelt at the time of the collision. The second driver was not injured. This crash remains under investigation. Equestrian group seeking to plot land for barn construction. An equestrian group called Evergreen Equine is looking to plot a 23.15-acre tract of land in order to build a horse barn at its North Midland location. They are represented by Maverick Engineering in this request. One of many equestrian groups around Midland, Evergreen Equine recently finished second in Midland Polo's Wildcatters tournament. While it has facilities there, the property itself has not been plotted, necessitating the need to go through the plotting process in order to designate the area as one lot. Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended approval of this request to be reviewed at a future Midland City Council meeting. A shared calling bonds Bunch Brothers. Separate career paths connect in public safety. For brothers Justin and Toby Bunch, the importance of family and community within their lives is paramount. And now that the Sergeant Michael Naylor Law Enforcement Complex is up and running, they work closer than ever, just across the hall from each other. Justin, an emergency management manager and county fire marshal for the past 9 years, has also worked in law enforcement, serving as an officer for the city of Midland for 13 years. Toby, an arson investigator, has served in various roles within the Midland Fire Department for 17 years. Justin said that his interest in law enforcement began in childhood, which was influenced by his mother's adrenaline-seeking nature and their experiences with tornado sirens. He also said that his involvement in a volunteer fire department in high school eventually led him to obtain his emergency medical technician license. He later worked in an emergency room before joining the police department. Quote, "I started in law enforcement and it came into something more," end quote, Justin explained. Quote, "Toby started on the fire side of things. I think it is neat that we have met in the middle, coming from two different aspects, and now we work out of the same building but are working from two different agencies," end quote. Toby said his career path also started with volunteer work in high school. He worked in the oil field before deciding to join MFD. He said one of the most important aspects of his job is being in a role as a public servant, educating others about fire prevention. Quote, "The key to fires is prevention," end quote, Toby explained. Quote, "If we can prevent something from happening or mitigate the effect of it, then that's going to reduce what an incident does. It is also going to reduce the cost, the response that we have to send, and it is going to save lives," end quote. Toby said that keeping functional smoke alarms in homes is key. If that alarm wakes people up, deaths can be prevented. Quote, "If we can educate people, especially right now with the colder weather, we are starting to have space heater fires," end quote, Toby said. Quote, "We just had one last week where a home caught fire because of a space heater. We can prevent just about every fire, I would say at least the man-made ones, through prevention," end quote. Reflecting on his own experience with arson investigations, Justin said part of the complexity is the automatic destruction of evidence. Quote, "Arson is one of the hardest crimes to prove because all your evidence is destroyed, such as DNA, even fingerprints," end quote, Justin said. Quote, "When I was working for the city, I did accident reconstruction, and we could use math to figure out formulas and skid marks. We could determine a lot of stuff, but here it's a lot harder, especially if you don't have a confession," end quote. Additionally, Justin clarified the role of the fire marshal's office. Quote, "When we talk about being a fire marshal, most people think that's a fireman," end quote, Justin said. Quote, "In reality, our office is a fire department, but it is non-suppression based. We don't fight fires. We are prevention only. We start by doing fire inspections, installing smoke alarms, and also doing investigations," end quote. Justin said that another requirement of his job is obtaining and maintaining certifications. They're required by the fire service and by state law enforcement. Quote, "So when people think of fire marshals, they don't think of us as cops, but we are," end quote, Justin said. Quote, "The easiest way for me to explain it is that people think we are detectives. We are no different than a property detective or other detective. We are just highly specialized in fire crimes," end quote. One of the most memorable parts of both brothers' careers ultimately dealt with death and disaster. For Toby, he said the 2012 Midland train crash, where a Union Pacific train struck a parade float carrying veterans and their spouses. Four veterans were killed and dozens were injured. Justin recalled responding to a scene that involved a pickup truck on fire. While the driver of the pickup was able to seek help, the driver's niece was still stuck in the vehicle. Quote, we responded out there for a traffic control and the fire came upon us, end quote, Justin said. Quote, you could see the smoke. A truck had gone out in the field and caught fire. This guy comes running out of the smoke and his arms are destroyed, end quote. Justin remembered that he and another police sergeant grabbed fire extinguishers and ran into the field. Quote, we finally found the truck, and when we got there, all that was left was the little girl's skull, end quote, Justin said. The Bunch brothers reiterated the importance of fire prevention and awareness of potential hazards. Quote, I would really say just stay cognizant of your surroundings and what you are doing because, I mean, most of our fires in the city limits are not arson, end quote, Toby said. Quote, most of our stuff is accidental, such as candles, space heaters, unattended cooking, and unextinguished smoking, end quote. Toby advised the public that if they are going to light a candle, make sure to blow it out before leaving. For space heaters, make sure there are at least 3 feet of clearance around them and that they're not sitting on potentially flammable surfaces such as carpet. Quote, it's just the small things that can make a difference, end quote, said Toby. Justin agreed and emphasized the importance of always being prepared. Quote, if people can sustain themselves for 24 to 72 hours with water, food, medication, heating, candles, lights, then that's less of a burden on emergency services to handle the minor stuff where we can be out handling the major steps where we need the personnel, end quote, he said. USGS plans low-level helicopter flights to scan aquifers. Portions of the Permian Basin will be part of a USGS survey set to begin the week of January 12th. The U.S. Geological Survey will be conducting low-level flights using airborne geophysical technology to image geology and aquifers in Curry and Roosevelt counties in New Mexico and Palmer and Bailey counties in Texas. The flights are expected to last between 1 and 2 months, depending on weather. The flights will be based out of Portales, New Mexico, and will cover an area of about 1,300 square miles surrounding Clovis and Cannon Air Force Base. This survey will support groundwater studies of the region in cooperation with the U.S. Air Force. The new geophysical data will be processed to develop high-resolution, three-dimensional representations of geology and aquifer structure to depths up to about 1,000 feet below the surface. Together with independent USGS measurements of depth to groundwater in wells, the data will be used to develop maps that show the thickness of the aquifer that is saturated with groundwater. Quote, the 3D models and maps are important for improving our understanding of water resources, and this type of airborne survey allows us to cover large areas very effectively, end quote. Burke Mensley, USGS research geophysicist in charge of the airborne survey, said in a statement. USGS is contracting with Woolpert, which has subcontracted with New Resolution Geophysics to collect the data. The survey will use a helicopter equipped with a towed, quote, hoop, end quote, that is deployed about 100 feet beneath the helicopter when in flight. Instruments in the hoop will measure variations in Earth's electrical properties and magnetic field created by different rock types. The scientific instruments on the helicopter create no emissions that pose a risk to humans, animals, or plant life. USGS said, adding that no photography or video data will be recorded. The data collected will be made freely available to the public on ScienceBase once complete. The aircraft will be flown by experienced pilots who are specially trained and approved for low-level flying. The company works with the Federal Aviation Administration to ensure flights are safe and in accordance with U.S. law. The surveys will be conducted during daylight hours only. The helicopter will fly along pre-planned flight paths relatively low to the ground at about 200 feet above the surface. Surveys do not occur over densely populated areas, and the helicopter will not directly overfly buildings at low altitude. Flights will follow southwest-northeast lines spaced about 1,600 feet apart. Odessa police continue search for a woman missing since 2023. Odessa. Law enforcement officials with the Odessa Police Department are continuing their search for a missing woman. Identified as Rebecca Demery, she was last seen on March 1st, 2023. OPD said she is approximately 5 feet, 5 inches tall, weighs 180 pounds, has dark brown hair, hazel eyes, and was 32 years old during the time of her disappearance. Quote, today, Wednesday, the Odessa Police Department continued efforts in locating Rebecca by conducting several searches in various parts of South Odessa, end quote, OPD said in a statement. Quote, OPD will continue to search for her until she is found, end quote. Anyone with information in reference to this investigation is encouraged to contact the Odessa Police Department directly at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-0002772. No additional information regarding this case has been released to the public at this time. La Patrona Taqueria opens second truck. Popular Mexican food eatery now has fixed location. Fanatics of La Patrona Taqueria will no longer have to chase the truck anymore as the business has made a permanent stop, opening its second truck in Midland. La Patrona Taqueria has opened its second location, with the original taco truck transitioning to hit the road primarily for catering, bookings, and events. Cindy Beltran, co-owner of La Patrona Taqueria, said that the first truck opened about 4 years ago, serving authentic Mexican food tracing back to her roots in Jalisco, Mexico. Quote, we moved to Midland around 2020, and we were looking for very authentic Mexican food, and we couldn't find a whole lot of it, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, we decided to go ahead and share our recipes with the people of Midland, and we did that by opening a food truck, end quote. Beltran said that the recipes used for La Patrona's salsa, meat, and dishes incorporate many authentic flavors that have been passed down from her grandmother and her family. Quote, we put a lot of love and dedication into making sure you can taste all of those flavors, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, we're not just serving you food so that you get full. We're serving you something that we love and that we want you to take home, end quote. La Patrona Taqueria opened a second food truck to be able to better serve its regular customers. Quote, we do quite a bit of catering for the oil field and big corporations and companies across town, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, with so many caterings, we haven't been able to be at one set location, end quote. Many customers often called asking if the food truck had a certain location it could be found at, Beltran added. Quote, we decided to get a second food truck, that way we were stable, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, this second food truck won't move, and our first truck will be the one that travels to take care of our private caterings, parties, and whatever else it is booked for, end quote. The new food truck will feature the same menu, including different tacos, burrito ramen, quesadillas, burritos, and more. Our customers will be glad to know there is now a location where they can always find us, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, I think this will help us reach a bigger crowd, allowing us to expand and share our food with more people than before, end quote. The new food truck will be open at Ski Skeller Sports, 3327 West Wadley Avenue. It will be open every day except Saturday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Quote, if you're looking for food that's going to remind you of your childhood, or if you just want to try some really good, tasty food, we definitely want you to try our food and see what La Patrona is about, end quote, Beltran said. Life Tributes. Danny Lynn Wright Lindgren, 2/25/1959 to 1/5/2026. Danny Lynn Wright Lindgren, loving wife, mother, grandmother, daughter, and dance teacher, passed away peacefully at her home in Midland after a courageous battle with ALS on January 5, 2026. Danny was born on February 25, 1959 in Seminole, Oklahoma, to parents Ann and Herman Wright. Danny is survived by her loving husband, Stephen Lindgren of Midland, her parents, Herman and Ann Wright of Midland, her daughter and son-in-law, Taylor and Austin Wallace of Fort Worth, her daughter-in-law, Stephanie Sergo, and her husband, Blake Sergo of Houston, her cherished grandchildren, Blake and West Wallace, and Parker, Isabel, Michael, and Max Sergo, her brother and sister-in-law, Lance and Stephanie Wright of Midland, her brother and his partner, Brad Wright and Tony Ariola of Austin, her brother-in-law and his wife, Scott and Karen Lindgren of Frisco, her nieces and nephews, Landry, Katie, and Carson Wright, along with many great nieces and nephews, cousins, students, and friends whom she loved dearly. She was preceded in death by her stepson, Jason Lindgren, her mother-in-law, Rachel Lindgren, and her father-in-law, Bruce Lindgren. Services will take place on Monday, January 12, 2026 at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church in Midland. In keeping with Danny's spirit, guests are encouraged to wear colors. Black attire is not necessary. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly asks that donations be made to the Houston Methodist Hospital Foundation, ALS Fund, at https://givingforms.houstonmethodist.org/generalgivingform. Please specify ALS Fund. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Frank Anthony Vetrano, 12/15/1932 to 1/5/2026. Frank Anthony Vetrano, 93, of Midland, passed away peacefully on Monday, January 5, 2026. A rosary will begin at 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, January 11, 2026, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Please wear maroon or your Aggie gear to honor Frank. Services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, January 12, 2026, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Frank was born on December 15, 1932, in Waco, Texas, to Anthony and Josephine Vetrano. Frank is survived by his wife, Jane, daughter Linda Nichols, Ray, son Tony Vetrano, Helen, granddaughters Jessica, Sarah, Samantha, Tegan, Courtney Baker, Colin, and Haley Wright, Stephen. Great-grandchildren Jaden, Isla, Madden, Dawson, Bradley, Gwyneth, Jude, and Alani. Niece Sherry Edrington, John, and nephew David Yost, Mary. Great-niece Ashley Ashbaugh, Matt, and great-nephew Austin Edrington, Mallory, along with many extended family members. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Manor Park, High Sky Children's Ranch, or Helping Hands. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. June Stembridge Kimmel. June Stembridge Kimmel, 71, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 31st, 2025, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 12 o'clock p.m., January 14th, 2026, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Viewing will take place before the service from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. La Patrona Taqueria opens second truck. Popular Mexican food eatery now has fixed location. Fanatics of La Patrona Taqueria will no longer have to chase the truck anymore as the business has made a permanent stop, opening its second truck in Midland. La Patrona Taqueria has opened its second location, with the original taco truck transitioning to hit the road primarily for catering, bookings, and events. Cindy Beltran, co-owner of La Patrona Taqueria, said that the first truck opened about 4 years ago, serving authentic Mexican food tracing back to her roots in Jalisco, Mexico. Quote, we moved to Midland around 2020, and we were looking for very authentic Mexican food, and we couldn't find a whole lot of it, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, we decided to go ahead and share our recipes with the people of Midland, and we did that by opening a food truck, end quote. Beltran said that the recipes used for La Patrona's salsa, meat, and dishes incorporate many authentic flavors that have been passed down from her grandmother and her family. Quote, we put a lot of love and dedication into making sure you can taste all of those flavors, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, we're not just serving you food so that you get full. We're serving you something that we love and that we want you to take home, end quote. La Patrona Taqueria opened a second food truck to be able to better serve its regular customers. Quote, we do quite a bit of catering for the oil field and big corporations and companies across town, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, with so many caterings, we haven't been able to be at one set location, end quote. Many customers often called asking if the food truck had a certain location it could be found at, Beltran added. Quote, we decided to get a second food truck, that way we were stable, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, this second food truck won't move, and our first truck will be the one that travels to take care of our private caterings, parties, and whatever else it is booked for, end quote. The new food truck will feature the same menu, including different tacos, burrito ramen, quesadillas, burritos, and more. Our customers will be glad to know there is now a location where they can always find us, end quote, Beltran said. Quote, I think this will help us reach a bigger crowd, allowing us to expand and share our food with more people than before, end quote. The new food truck will be open at Ski Skeller Sports, 3327 West Wadley Avenue. It will be open every day except Saturday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Quote, if you're looking for food that's going to remind you of your childhood, or if you just want to try some really good, tasty food, we definitely want you to try our food and see what La Patrona is about, end quote, Beltran said. Oil Report, ExxonMobil. Shale lessons for 2026. Price matters less as efficiency rises. Unconventional shale has been revolutionizing the Permian Basin in the U.S. for over two decades, but continues to school operators. As 2025 came to an end, Primary Vision detailed three key takeaways from shale during the year. First, longer and larger frack jobs are becoming more common. Second, production trends are shaped by far more than oil prices alone, with technology, automation, and AI improving planning, execution, and recovery rates. Third, U.S. shale has focused on unlocking more oil through improved consumables and more efficient deployment of horsepower capacity, weakening the traditional linkage between price signals and short-term activity. Quote, the three key takeaways are definitely applicable for companies. This holds special relevance and importance when deciding budgets or assessing the health of the market in 2026, end quote. Osama Rizvi, energy and economic analyst at Primary Vision, told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, it also helps policymakers and decision makers in the company to focus on the right factors. For instance, not obsessing only about price, but also looking at the technological advancements, horsepower deployment, size, and duration of frack jobs, it gives them a holistic view, end quote. Primary Vision said its frack spread count ended the year at 154, down six for the final week of 2025, while its frack job count remained steady. This Marco backdrop carried into Primary Vision's work on the oil field service industry, where it created an OFS ranking, a scorecard highlighting which business models are best positioned in the current cycle. Technip FMC stood out as the clearest structural leader, followed by Halliburton and NOV on execution and diversification. Pressure-focused names remained constrained. ProFrac illustrated the challenge well, improving operations and cost control, but still screening expensive versus peers because structure ultimately caps upside. Midland-based ProPetro was ranked as overvalued. Quote, here is the logic for overvaluation. Let's compare ProPetro, whose stock ticker is PUMP, with some of its close competitors, Patterson, UTI, Liberty, and Neighbors. PUMP's EV/EVITDA, multiple expansion, forward multiple versus current is 10%, which is much steeper than the peer's average of 2%, meaning PUMP's EBITDA should fall more sharply than its peers. This should typically result in a lower EV/EBITDA multiple than its peers. But PUMP's current EV/EBITDA of 5.4 times is higher than its peers' average of 4.6 times. So it looks pricey, end quote, explained Avik Banjit Chowdhury, financial analyst at Primary. Chowdhury said the OFS ranking model examines companies on multiple criteria, starting with management's tone in the outlook, projects during the quarter, backlog confidence, revenue growth, margin expansion slash contraction, and capital discipline. Quote, more importantly, it tries to capture the business model diversity. So SLB's diversified model can carry more weight than PUMP's relatively narrow business structure. We have also assigned a higher weight to the mobile electricity generation route, which some pressure pumpers have adopted. We considered all these variables over the past several quarters, starting with the first quarter, 2024, and accounted for the progress. Then we assigned weights and ranked them, hopefully achieving a level playing field and consistency in the process. We will update the model as we move forward, end quote, Chowdhury said. Battalion Oil to sell West Quito Draw assets for $62.59 million. Battalion Oil Corp. is selling substantially all of its properties in the West Quito Draw area of Ward County to MCM Delaware Resources, for approximately $62.59 million. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, Battalion said the properties include approximately 6,207 net acres. Proved reserves from these properties accounted for approximately 8 million barrels of oil equivalent, or approximately 12.4% of the company's 2024 year-end proved reserves. The effective date of the proposed sale is December 1, 2025, and the company expects to close the transaction in the first quarter of 2026. Battalion said in its filing it intends to use the net proceeds from the divestiture of the West Quito assets, if such transaction closes, to repay amounts outstanding under the company's senior secured credit agreement, and for general corporate purposes, including funding potential acquisitions and planned drilling expenditures. Pursuant to the terms of the agreement, MCM paid into escrow a deposit totaling approximately $6.26 million, which account will be applied to the purchase price if the transaction closes. Battalion said in its filing the parties may terminate the agreement if certain closing conditions have not been satisfied or if total adjustments to the purchase price exceed 20% of the purchase price. Approximately $12.52 million, or the transaction is not closed on or before March 26, 2026. Wall Street Sand launches dry sand operations. Wall Street Sand Company has reached a significant milestone at its Kermit Frack Sand facility. The company, founded in 2023, has launched dry sand operations at the facility, allowing it to support the evolving completion needs of operators and service companies. Quote, our original focus was supporting wet sand in the Permian Basin. As we developed the site, we quickly recognized that the combination of exceptional in-site sand quality, abundant on-site water, and unique process capabilities created an opportunity to build something fundamentally different than a traditional sand mine, end quote. Brandon Foster, Wall Street Chief Executive Officer, told the Reporter-Telegram. Quote, expanding into dry sand wasn't a pivot. It was the natural evolution of a vertically integrated, innovation-driven system designed to serve customers efficiently in any market environment, end quote. According to Foster, Wall Street Sand was founded in 2023 with the Limited Liability Corporation established that same year. The property was acquired and the company broke ground in April 2024. Quote, reaching full dry sand operations in that time frame is a significant milestone and reflects how intentionally this project was designed from the beginning, end quote, Foster said. The primary difference between wet sand and dry sand is moisture content and logistics, he said. Dry sand has gone through a full drying process and is essentially 100% sand. Wet sand typically contains about 5% moisture, meaning it's roughly 95% sand. Importantly, wet sand is still a high-quality propant. It's not mud or low-grade material. Both sands perform well downhole and are widely used across the Permian Basin, with the choice often dependent on completion design, logistics, and customer preference. Expanding into dry sand significantly expands workforce requirements across multiple disciplines. The facility includes 7 dedicated dry sand loadout lanes and over 100,000 tons of on-site dry storage, which requires skilled operators to run safely and efficiently, according to Foster. Quote, because we perform our own mining and processing, job creation spans loader operators, mining and excavator operators, plant operators, and dry plant specialists. As we continue to scale, this operation supports both direct employment and broader economic activity throughout the region, end quote. The company operates 48 water wells on site, extremely low turbidity sand, and high crush strength straight out of the ground. Those natural advantages are paired with Wall Street's patented prop thrust slurry and agitation process, allowing the company to produce an exceptionally clean, high-quality product at a structurally low cost. Quote, we believe that cleaner sand improves placement efficiency, reduces operational friction during pumping, and ultimately contributes to stronger well performance, end quote, Foster said. Quote, from our perspective, delivering higher quality propant directly impacts well productivity and helps our customers achieve a higher return on their capital investments, end quote. Currently, he said, demand has been strong, driven by a combination of product quality, operational reliability, and sustainable cost competitiveness. As of today, more than 200,000 tons of Wall Street's dry sand are already contracted, despite having only recently entered the dry sand market. Quote, looking ahead to 2026, we forecast approximately 7.5 million tons sold across wet and dry sand combined. Roughly half of that volume is already contracted, with the remainder expected to transact in the spot market. From an operational standpoint, we're built to support that scale. With 11 total loadout lanes, we maintain a steady, predictable cadence of trucks moving in and out of the facility. This is critical for efficiency, trucking retention, and customer reliability, end quote, Foster said. He concluded, quote, while overall industry activity may fluctuate, we believe suppliers with structurally advantaged cost positions, consistent quality, and dependable execution will continue to see demand. Our focus is on building a system that performs in both up cycles and down cycles, giving our customers confidence that we'll be a reliable partner regardless of market conditions, end quote. ProPetro's ProPWR wins Coterra microgrid deal in New Mexico. ProPWR continues to rack up contracts a year into operation. A division of ProPetro, ProPWR has executed a contract to provide turnkey power for the development and installation of distributed microgrids throughout the New Mexico portion of the Permian Basin with a subsidiary of Coterra Energy, Inc. Deployment and operations for the project are scheduled to begin in the first quarter of 2026. It is ProPWR's second contract in New Mexico, said Dave Bosco, ProPWR Vice President, Technical Services. He said the company is permitting the assets to meet New Mexico emissions regulations. He said in comparing emissions, ProPWR's equipment is 40% better than regulations. Matt Augustine, Vice President of Finance and Investor Relations, said ProPWR can help power assets across parts of the Permian Basin with limited or no access to the electric grid. Vice President, Finance and Investor Relations. The contract with Coterra's subsidiary is the fourth announced by the company, which now has 220 megawatts under contract. ProPWR has also placed orders for an additional 190 megawatts of equipment, bringing current delivered or on-order capacity to about 550 megawatts. Bosco said that is the equivalent of powering 300,000 to 330,000 homes. To reach 220 megawatts in roughly a year is exciting, the two men agreed. The equipment portfolio is split 70% high-efficiency natural gas reciprocating engine generators, and 30% low-emissions modular turbines. Quote, beyond that, ProPWR is well-positioned to order additional capacity, end quote, said Augustine, who estimated capacity could reach 750 megawatts delivered by year-end 2028 and 1 gigawatt or more by 2030. Quote, we will continue to place assets where there's opportunity given the demand for power across the U.S., end quote, he said. Quote, we will continue playing in the oilfield production microgrid space and data centers, end quote. Added Bosco, quote, we want to be in areas that are challenged with grid access and interconnectedness, end quote. Augustine acknowledged the company, as a completion services provider, has been affected by the slowdown in activity over the last 12 to 24 months. But, he said, quote, we've created a resilient company, end quote. Bosco agreed, saying the company is transitioning from a traditional oil field services company to a next-generation company offering multiple lines of service. That transition will allow ProPWR to have a big impact on its parent company's bottom line, he said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 12th. Primary features packed local ballot. The upcoming March 3rd primary features both GOP and Democratic primaries in Ector County that are contested. Potential voters have until February 2nd to register to vote. That is also the last day to make a change of address. Early voting begins February 17th and ends February 27th, ahead of the March 3rd primary day. Some races will be decided in the GOP primary in Ector County, with no Democratic challengers for November. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett is seeking his second term as the top elected official in Ector County. He will face former Ector County Library employee Sunil Mehta. Winner takes all in this March race with no Democrat seeking the seat in November. Mehta previously worked at the Ector County Sheriff's Office prior to working at the library. Mehta is suing Ector County, alleging he was fired from the library 8 days after reporting what he believes to be illegal hiring practices. The Commissioner's Court has 2 seats up in Precinct 4 and Precinct 2. The Precinct 2 race will be decided in the March primary amongst Republicans, with no Democrat in November. That seat has been occupied by retiring Commissioner Greg Simmons for more than 2 decades. The announcement of his retirement has 5 Republicans vying for the seat: Richard Pierce, former Commissioner Don Stringer, Grayson Hankins, Jason Payne, and James Poor have all filed in the GOP primary. With 5 candidates, it is likely there will be a runoff, as the winning candidate must have more than 50% of the vote. Stringer was previously a commissioner in Precinct 3, but lost that seat to current Commissioner Samantha Russell. In Precinct 4, current Commissioner Billy Hall will face Marty Slayton in the GOP primary. The winner will then take on former Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez, who filed as an independent, seeking the seat he lost 4 years ago to Hall. Also, Democrat Jesse Porras filed for the Precinct 4 Commissioner seat. Also on the ballot are many statewide seats, including Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, Land Commissioner, Agriculture Commissioner, Comptroller, and more. The March primary has the following races: Democrats, JP Precinct 4, Christina Mendoza McKinney, and Crystal Z. Rios. The following are unopposed: Ector County Chair Joanna Keyes, Commissioner Precinct 4 Jesse M. Porras III, Precinct Chair 203 Daniel R. Ryan, Precinct Chair 209 Christopher Chavira, Precinct Chair 301 Kerry Hallmark, Precinct Chair 303 Chad Riley, Precinct Chair 305 Tim McDaniel, Precinct Chair 314 Susan Gentry, Precinct Chair 403 Jesus Ray. Republican: Ector County Judge Justin Fawcett, Sunil Mehta. County Treasurer Cleopatra Calloway, Amanda Prieto Snyder. Commissioner Precinct 2 Jason Payne, Grayson Hankins, Richard Pierce, Don Stringer, James Poor. Commissioner Precinct 4 Billy Hall, Marty Slayton. Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 Carlos Chavez, Steve Brennan. Justice of the Peace Precinct 3 Ronnie Hernandez, Bill Bowen. Justice of the Peace Precinct 4 Elizabeth R. Baeza, Martha Acosta. Precinct Chair 205 Dale Barnes, Charlie Pierce. Precinct Chair 312 Susan Jones, Billy DuBose. Unopposed Republicans: 70th District Judge Judge Den Whalen, 244th District Judge Lori Ruiz Crutcher, County Court at Law Number 1 Brooke D. Hendrick, County Court at Law 2 Christopher Clark, District Clerk Guadalupe Lupita Navarrete, County Clerk Jennifer Martin, Justice of the Peace Precinct 2 Missy Walden, County Chair Donna J. Kelm, Precinct Chair 101 Sylvia Rodriguez Sanchez, Precinct Chair 102 William Kapoff, Precinct Chair 104 Weenight Garrett, Precinct Chair 108, Gary Don McCain. Precinct Chair 110, Dallas Kennedy. Precinct Chair 201, Jill Miller. Precinct Chair 202, Tracy Gregston. Precinct Chair 203, Chris Crow. Precinct Chair 206, Alan Hurley. Precinct Chair 207, Rachel D. Miner. Precinct Chair 208, Betsy Rose. Precinct Chair 209, Gary S. Johnson. Precinct Chair 303, Nathaniel Navarrete. Precinct Chair 305, Gabriela G. Aranda. Precinct Chair 307, Christian Sanchez. Precinct Chair 310, Jaime Mendoza. Precinct Chair 314, Jimmy Lee. Precinct Chair 407, Carlos Valenzuela Modesto. Precinct Chair 409, Luis Galvan. Precinct Chair 412, Judy Barker. Black Cultural Council of Odessa schedules MLK Day events. Weekend scheduled to celebrate civil rights leader. This story was written by Nathaniel Miller. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa has scheduled its annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration to remember and celebrate the legacy of the civil rights leader. During the three-day weekend, members of the community are invited to participate in one or all events. This year's theme is Celebrating the Dream, Continuing the Journey. Created as a federal holiday to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. every third Monday in January, the BCCO uses the weekend to celebrate King's message of equal rights for all people. Additionally, the BCCO hosts an annual Juneteenth celebration considered the largest in Texas. The Council's Martin Luther King Jr. celebration will begin with the annual MLK Showcase basketball tournament on January 17th at the Permian High School Fieldhouse, starting at 9 a.m. A gospel celebration is scheduled to start at 3:30 p.m. January 18th at Greater St. John Baptist Church, 211 South Muskingum Avenue. The Reverend Mark Hood Sr. from Liberty Baptist Church in Tyler will speak. Hood previously spoke during the 2025 MLK Day celebration, as well as the 2024 Juneteenth event. The King Brunch is scheduled from 10 a.m. to noon on January 19th at Woodson Community Center, followed by the Freedom March at 1:30 p.m., starting at the Southside Senior Center. Senior Housing on Council Agenda. The story was written by Kim Smith. Odessa City Council members will discuss affordable senior housing, accessory dwelling units, and landscaping ordinances during its work session Tuesday. According to materials provided to council members, Lantern at Odessa LP would like to build an affordable 72-unit apartment complex for people 55 and older on vacant land located at 4707 Maple Avenue. Lantern at Odessa is seeking approval of the project before it submits an application to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs for competitive 9% housing tax credits. In addition, City Manager Aaron Smith wants to discuss accessory dwelling units, which are secondary, smaller living spaces on the same property as a primary home. ADUs are gaining in popularity nationwide because they increase affordable housing in existing neighborhoods, provide rental income to homeowners, and allow for multi-generational living. In other matters, Planning and Zoning Director Elizabeth Shaughnessy is scheduled to ask the council to consider amending a city ordinance regarding landscaping requirements. According to materials provided to the council, Shaughnessy said the amended ordinance sets clear standards for design, plan review, maintenance, and enforcement for certain non-residential and multiple family developments. As a result, she believes the city would gain more consistent and high-quality landscaping. Quote, its purpose is to enhance environmental quality, encourage water conservation, and improve the overall quality of life for residents, workers, and visitors, Shaughnessy wrote in her summary to the council. The council will also again discuss the naming and renaming of city-owned land and facilities. During the regular council meeting, the council will consider the appointment of one or more mayor pro tems. They'd perform the duties of the mayor in his absence.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.